FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is March 7th, 2017. The year is just slipping by and nothing is really changing, is it? But the Ides of March are ahead. We've got the Netherlands election coming up right on the Ides of March. Then comes France and, well, who knows what happens after that. Well, with us is Danielle Park. Danielle, welcome.
Hey, Kerry.
Hey, so these elections are coming up and more civil unrest, no doubt. But you had an interesting article about a financial icon in the U.S. and the world, for that matter, none other than our Warren Buffett. And to put it charitably, you don't appear to be such a fan of his.
Well, it's something that's evolved over the past 20 years, for sure. I mean, when I was a brand new financial analyst, of course, I heard about Buffett and I read, you know, The Buffett Way and all those books about his history of how he had come to, you know, take Berkshire Hathaway over, manage it all those years. And I started out very impressed like everybody else. Unfortunately, in the last 20 years, we entered the secular bear market where valuations hit lunatic fringe in 2000. Everything was pretty much infected with the same overvaluation bug. And Mr. Buffett's fund, you know, has grown in size, billions and billions over the years. And now he holds such large positions in the companies that he's invested in that he really is stuck with sort of long always positions. And this is where the trouble comes for regular folks trying to take any insight or wisdom or advice from the sound bites or comments that one hears coming from the Oracle of Omaha these days. Because as in 2007, he was not warning about peak valuations until after the fact, after, you know, the sort of bubble had burst. Then he was, you know, talking about, yes, in fact, if you look at things like traditional valuations that have held merit over time, you know, like his favorite, which I was writing about in this article, and he's referenced it, you know, since at least 2000, talking about the total market capitalization of the U.S. stock market as a fraction of its gross national product. And whenever that basically gets, you know, anywhere above one, you're in real bubble territory. And indeed, it got to something like 1.5 in 2000 at the tech peak, and it recovered again to just over one at the peak in 2008. And then today, we're right back above 1.3, you know, almost to 1.4 on that metric. And yet Mr. Buffett is trouted out by CNBC and all the usual suspects. And he never mentions a word about valuations or, you know, cautioning people that they should be careful. He just says his old folksy nonsense about, well, you know, I don't worry about the economy. I don't worry about HFT. I don't worry about cheaters and riggers in the market. I just buy good companies. But the fact of the matter is that he has a bunch of things going for him, which make his comments really irrelevant and potentially very harmful for average people. One of them is that, you know, he is now, as I say, basically in lockstep with the S&P 500. So because his allocations are held throughout, you know, he lost the Berkshire Hathaway share price plunged about 50% with the S&P in 2008. And it took him all the way to 13 through the first incantations of QE out of the Fed before Berkshire shares recovered. So it took 5 years to get back to square after the last bear market. It's only been in the last, you know, couple of years that he's really broke into, you know, the share value of Berkshire has now been, you know, net positive gains. And here's the problem. Because it is are basically just a proxy for the S&P 500. And because it is insanely overvalued today in the you know, rarefied company of tech bubble madness, he's likely to plunge, that share price is likely to plunge in a similar in the next bear market. And, you know, if that's the case, if it dropped 50% from where it is today, Carrie, the math of this is that he'd be back where the share price was in 2007. Now, it doesn't pay dividends. So people would have had, you know, more than 10 years of up and down angst and actually zero to show for their effort. So he can talk about, well, I just buy good companies and don't worry about it. But the way his investors experience that is through his share price. And so lost decades where people lose a ton, gain it back, lose a ton, and then spend the next 5 to 10 years trying to get back to square again. That's pretty catastrophic in the finite life of mere mortals here on Earth. And, you know, the other thing is we mostly aren't billionaires. Mr. Buffett has obviously more capital than he'll ever use in his lifetime. But he's also working still at 86, still receiving an income from employment at 86. You know, this is a far cry from the average American who's, you know, in his late 50s or her late 50s thinking she ought to be able to retire soon. I mean, most people have, you know, don't have near enough savings. And frankly, the pensions they were counting on are blowing pistons left and right. And so this is my point about all this bubble economy, you know, the bailouts, the Fed policies. Another reader was pointing out to me just today that, you know, and I hadn't even thought of this in my article, but Buffett being a big bank bank investor through Berkshire was a direct beneficiary of the bailout packages that came out of the government. And he was heavy lobbying behind closed doors in 2008 to get the TARP package passed and for all the Fed interventions that he directly benefited from. And then he was able to get sweet deals from Goldman because his bank shares were bailed out by the government. So again, he is privy to, you know, influence and preferential treatment and government largesse and support and bailouts that none of us in the real world ever get access to. And even if you hire him as your guru to hold Berkshire shares and think, oh, well, he's a genius, he'll look after me, you're more likely than not to be back where you started 10 years ago during the next bear market. So none of this serves regular people well. And I'm really quite fed up with having to watch this charade play out over the last 20 years, seeing, you know, the bubble economy, the pump and dump scams, you know, Snapchat, whatever, every IPO that comes out, you know, the bankers pump it up, they sell it to a gullible public, you know, the stock plunges, people lose a fortune. I mean, the fees keep coming for the bankers and the insiders, but the average person is really preyed upon. It's a very predatory model. And you can tell that it's not working because even with stocks today at these, you know, once in a 150 years type, you know, peaks, you still have all these holes gaping wider by the day inside of pension funds. So that tells you right there that the working people are being screwed over while the insiders and elites are making off like bandits. And not enough people are calling truth on this stuff and pointing it out. Instead, these powerful people, the ones that are getting all these preferential terms, are being thrown up to the average person as models of what they should try and emulate. You know, oh, well, you have to be brave and you have to, you know, volatility, don't worry about it. You're a long-term investor. No, you're not. No, you're not. If you're in your late 50s, no, you're not. You're lucky to have 10, 20, and 30-year windows here to work with. And if we are at the end of the secular bear that began in 2000, we get into the next cyclical bear market, that very likely will take us back to where markets were at least 10 or 12 years ago. So talk about how that's going to impact the savings deficits, which are already prolific throughout the regular population and pension plans. I mean, this is catastrophic for regular people.
Yeah, and the future ain't what it used to be, right? As Yogi Berra would say.
The future is driven by valuations and, you know, where prices are when we're trying to buy these assets. That's the truth. And I think that there'll be a great opportunity again. And I'm very optimistic that we are going to get another bear market. I don't think they've banned them. I don't think the Fed's done away with mean reversion cycles. They've certainly delayed, extended, and pretended. They've kept the gravy train going for some of the insiders and the bankers. There's no question. But have they repealed the business cycle? Have they obliterated anticipated bear markets? Absolutely not. I see zero evidence to suspect that's the case. And that means that we're going to get another secular boom period where valuations start from low values and they become rewarding and investments are worth holding again. But we're just like, we have to jump off the Grand Canyon here first to start from the valley floor again. And until that happens, these assets are toxic. They're not worth holding. And no one has a timeline that's long enough for individuals to stomach this kind of a cycle.
Yeah. And when you do hit these cycles, Danielle, you know, it's for individuals, it's real hard to not let your emotions kick in and dictate your actions here. And the action is just to dump and run, right?
Well, absolutely. And that's the reality of human behavior. So that's another one, you know, that I would talk to, to ad nauseum about it, but it's so worthwhile remembering that, you know, it's one thing, it's not about what markets are doing. It's about how much exposure should you ever have given your age and stage in the first place, given the risk, and especially at these valuations, you know, how much can you actually tolerate and what should you tolerate in terms of risk capital of your savings here? And then also the fact that, you know, this whole nonsense, the long always crowd will always say if there's a market crash or a bear market, oh, you know, just buy more. You should be buying more. But nobody ever tells you to sell, to take profits when risk is high and valuations are nonsensical. So no one has enough capital. And then after you've lost half your capital, you know, that's when your risk tolerance is even lower than it was when you had a higher level of capital. That's how that works, right? You've got less capital now. You can't just go and allocate more to risky assets when you've already lost a big chunk of your principal. Mm-hmm. So it's in the real world, this stuff is catastrophic. It drives people to suicide, to terrible health problems, marital problems, breakdowns. I mean, this is the real world. And yet we've got a system that's set up to literally prey and extract and mislead and fraud and dupe in every kind of possible way to take financial advantage, and call it advice, by the way. You know, that's another incredibly insane part of this system, is that we're allowing these asset pump and dump schemes to call themselves advisors, financial advisors, to be, you know, control the airwaves, propaganda, I call it. But, you know, that's the thing. And we have it in Canada all over. You know, the I wrote about Wells North, Fargo of the North this week, because our Canadian TD Bank, you know, which very well respected, one of the big six in Canada, but all the banks, you know, I'm not just saying it's TD, all of them have subscribed to a Wells Fargo style business model over the past, increasingly so, as rates have fallen and margins have compressed over the past couple of decades. You know, they've been pumping credit at people who ought not to be borrowing. They've been taking advantage of the assurance that if they, you know, were to have a big problem, the taxpayers would step in to bail them out. They have the CMHC backing from the federal government, to guarantee the loans against losses to the banks. So they've really had, again, these conditions that no one else, no real person gets anything like this sense of safety net, you know, that they can blow themselves up and don't worry, they'll get bailed out. That's not what real people face. And yet these, you know, banksters are giving quarterly sales targets to their staff who are not wealthy people that have these jobs in banks. And they're saying, hey, if you don't sell X loans and overdrafts and credit cards, if you don't pump these products, if you don't hit these goals, you are not getting promoted and you may well get fired. And so these desperate souls then go and give toxic advice, quote, advice to their poor, you know, customers, and everyone's getting financially blown up and, you know, fed more debt than is good for them and all that. And it's coming back on the taxpayers again. And, you know, I just, you know, how long will this corrupt system exist is the question.
Yeah. Hey, well, one thing I will say about TD Bank, my dealings with them here, and it wasn't an account holder there, is that they're open on the weekends. Their people are really nice. They had a whole model of banking when they acquired Commerce Bank here in the U.S. Yeah. And really customer-oriented customer service. So I hadn't had much experience with them trying to cross-sell me with other products in the States. I don't know how they do it up north of the border, but they set the gold standard for customer service here and really, really going out of their way to service their clients here.
Listen, and TD Bank was the first bank that I opened my paper route money with account. My first account when I was 9 years old, that was with TD Bank. My student loans that I got for university over the years, TD Bank. When I first started our company, you know, TD Bank was our back office for a while. And then our TD Ameritrade, TD Waterhouse. And then also TD Bank is our bank today. It's the one I use. But I have still, I'm not saying there's not nice people that work there, and no doubt they came down with the Canadian nice factor to you know, to tell people, hey, this bank's going to give you great service. None of that is the problem. The problem is this corrupt system that we have underwritten by taxpayers, that is driven by top-down quarterly targets given to staff who are, by the way, coming forward. That story was the whistleblowers coming forward and saying, look, you know, we're nice people, but we are giving terrible advice and direction to our customers. They even know it, right? They're saying, like, we're literally trying to save our jobs on a weekly basis by hitting these insane targets. And it's doing harm to people.
And it makes them feel dirty, right? It makes their employees feel like we're not acting in the best interest of our friends and neighbors. And of course we can't stand what we're doing.
They know that, but they're in a financial, you know, they're a big consumer of financial products themselves, the bank employees. You know, they have bank shares as ESOP plans.
Yeah,
they have,
you
know, RSPs, pensions they're trying to save. They have, they get lots of loans, right? Because they get preferential rates on loans. They get car loans and student loans and house loans.
Yeah, everything.
It's just, and once you have all those payments and you got, you know, some kids to feed or whatever.
Mouths to feed,
It's hard. It's hard, right? And then you have these big wigs talking at you from the top down saying you better hit these targets or else. I mean, so, you know, in many ways, when we get into debt, we're all vulnerable to being given these mandates, which we know intuitively are wrong, which may indeed, we may indeed feel they're immoral. But, you know, if you're stuck with a bunch of payments yourself, you know, people end up being part of this machine, and they may be nice and all that. They may mean well, but the reality is they're working in a corrupt machine, and that machine has to be curtailed. And it's so simple. You know, all this talk about deregulating the banks and all that, fine, deregulate away. But here's the two things. Stop buybacks, which were only allowed by the SEC since 1982. This whole allowing companies to borrow and buy back their shares is a disaster. This is market manipulation. This is driving bubbles. This is doing no good for the real world whatsoever. It's just a speculative mania that's distorting values, and it's craziness. We have to stop that, and we have to sever this sales side from banking. That's it. That would be two pages of legislation. You want to sell people products? Great. You're not a bank backed by taxpayer, and you don't get bailouts if you go down on your sword. That's it. And then the rest of them, they can go over there and be, you know, sales machines, underwriting every piece of garbage that comes by them, you know, and pumping it to the public, fine. But they won't be allowed to be called advisors, and they won't get the bailouts from the taxpayer when they go down.
Yeah.
If you can just put that much honesty in the system, then we'll have some integrity come back in. We'll have a bit of free market forces, and we'll start to have some, you know, stability again.
I think that's a great idea. I guess we aren't going to see Glass-Steagall come back anytime soon. So in lieu of that, start giving them some free market discipline and start pulling, bank insurance out of it. Or better yet, let's privatize bank insurance and let them pay realistic premiums based on the riskiness of their balance sheets. Whatever it may be.
Let them insure one another, but have nothing to do with taxpayers. That's the thing. You want to be a big, you know, wig. You want to make obscene amounts of compensation, by all means, but make sure you're a free enterprise that is not on the public purse.
Yeah, and only insure banks that take deposits and make loans, traditional commercial loans, and don't make foreign loans to risky dictators or whatever. Go back to the traditional models of banking. And I'm sure you'd get plenty of entrance into that marketplace, you know, just doing traditional banking as we knew it. Well,
No other sector gets that much, support and promises and coddling and bailouts. Like no other sector
and
gets
low interest loans from the Fed, no interest loans and guaranteed returns on their money and all of the subsidies and encouragement for bad behavior that they get.
It's truly revolting. And the thing is that it's taken money away from everything else that a civil society requires it for in earnest. And secondly, you know, they then use their bully pulpit to browbeat people into buying their risk products as some kind of an intelligent financial move, you know, and it's so self-serving. It's so hypocritical. It's like, here, catch, we're selling this risk. You hold it and give us your cash. Yay. See you later. That's what it is.
Yeah. Remember the good old days when the banking industry's function was to allocate capital?
Yeah, well, it has been at different times, right? This is not the first time in history we've had this madness. It's a pendulum that swings back and forth. And frankly, you know, I don't think we're going to get any hard returns in this until we have another blow up. But that may be coming sooner than anyone thinks at this point, because the economy continues to downshift. The Atlanta Fed's Q1 2017 report is at 1.3 for GDP expectation. That's down 0.5% in just the month of March. P.S. The OECD this week came out with their global GDP forecast for 2017, and they're saying with the infrastructure spending and the tax cuts, if the Trump admin gets them through, which is a pretty big if, if they can pull that off in 16, you might get 3.3 as global GDP. Well, Kerry, that's like, you know, we've been sort of in that range since 2012. And, so that's not going to be enough to turn this thing around and keep making all the debt payments that everybody's increased dramatically in the last few years and, all these wondrous jobs that everybody hopes for while, you know, the incentives for robots continue to grow by the day. I mean, there's lots of smart things like, you know, I put on a thing about photovoltaic glass, which is just mind-bogglingly cool.
If you have
a look at that, that company is not theoretical. They're rolling out projects all over the world where they are turning whole buildings, never mind solar panels, all the glass on the outside become massive receptors for solar power. Tabletops inside, you can plug your phones into just glass tables in the lobby of buildings or anywhere where there's light that's coming from overhead or from windows. So this is this kind of technology is, you know, takes out layers of costs and it's, you know, all really cool. There's lots of really great stuff to be investing in, but, you know, rigging and jigging in financial markets, that's just, that's the death knell, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it at that. Hey, any questions, comments, email me kl@kerrylutz.com, kl@kerrylutz.com. And Twitter feed @KerryLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Check out Danielle's site, jugglingdynamite.com. And Danielle, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And we'll see what else they've come up with. In that space of time, no doubt they'll have something, right?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.